my father, when he first got out of the army, because he served in World War II, I think he actually, his first job was, he got a job at Riverston Meat Company, and from there he became a traveller, commercial traveller for Marcus Clarke's, which is how he ultimately got the car, our first car, and which was a black Austin A40, I still remember. And
what year would that have been, do you know, roughly?
Maybe when I was about 4 or 5, so it'd be about 1950. And as I said, my mother was already working in the post office here, and my dad ultimately got the job as postmaster here through my mother, only because of my mother. Anyway, my dad, every time they'd go to Sydney, if they had a day out in Sydney, he'd pop into Marcus Clarke's and see his old boss, and his old boss was still there. And he got me a job there at the end of my third year of high school, which was intermediate year. And he got me a job there working through the school holidays. And at the end of the school holidays, I thought it was marvellous. I actually had money in the bank, and, you know, I've never had money in my life. And Mr. Gates, my boss, rang my dad and said, "We'd like Judith to stay. Did you have any intention of her going back to school?" And Dad said no, but he told me a lot of years later they couldn't afford for me to go back to school, because they really needed to have me working. And my first job, I got paid £5.19 and 11 a week. I paid 19 and 10 pence in tax. So I had £5.01.
Just
then. Yes, and it cost me £1.10 a week for a weekly ticket. And I remember I paid £1.10 a week for my board. So I virtually had...
At home.
At home. So I virtually had £2.01 a week. And I used to put those one pennies away. I just think it was so lovely. I was watching this pile of one pennies mount up. I mean, that's nothing these days, of course. I mean, a penny was worth more than a cent is, of course. And I was there 2 years, and Marcus Clarke's went bankrupt. And I'd just come back from my yearly holidays, and I came back to work on a Friday, which is just the way it worked out. And came back to work on the Friday, and I thought, why are all these young girls sitting in our desks? Because a lot of us had gone on holidays. We were 17. And I actually was a supervisor of two girls, and those two girls were actually older than me, so I was their boss. And I said to Bev, "What's going on?" She said, "I don't know." And next minute, this what they call an efficiency expert came out and said, "I just thought we'd talk to the whole lot of you as a group. You'll be leaving next Tuesday. You'll be paid till next Friday, as we've had to retrench you." And I thought, well, what is retrenchment? And yeah, everybody knows now, but I didn't quite know what a retrenchment was. And I thought, how can I go home and tell my mother and father I got the sack? In the meantime, Mr. Gates had retired, and he always had looked after me. I'd always worked in his offices. And
this was at Broadway, was it, in the city?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And used to walk down the long ramp at Central and straight across the level crossing, and there I was, there, 8-storey building it was. And so I thought, what will I do? And I got in the bus and I went down to Anthony Horden's in my lunch hour. And I asked where was the office so I could see about getting work. And I went and saw this lady, and she said, "Oh, we're looking for people. Well, hang on a moment, we'll get someone to interview you." And they said, "When can you start?" And I said, "Oh, well, I'm leaving next Tuesday." And they said, "Well, how about next Thursday? That's the start of the new pay week." I said, "Fine." So I remember going home that night, and I went back to work, needless to say, and told a lot of my friends, and they went straight down there, and a lot of them got jobs. And Anthony Horden's. And I left on the Tuesday, and I had Wednesday off, in the middle of the week having a day off. And then on the Thursday, I started working at Anthony Horden's, and I worked there 20 months. And I was forced into leaving there because I had glandular fever and German measles. and I was very run down, and my doctor said that the travelling was, it was taking me too long. I was catching a train at 7 in the morning and getting home at 20 to 7 of a night. So it was steam trains. And it was a long day. And I was lucky enough to get a job at PGH Industrial Products at Doonside. And I worked there till I was married. And then when...
What year were you married?
66. And then when I was expecting Michelle, who lived in a flat at Stanmore. So instead of me being a Quaker girl working at Doonside, I was back at Stanmore, travelling to Doonside, and it was really getting me down. So I gave up work, and about a week later I went in to see all my mates at Anthony Horden's, who I'd still kept in contact with, and my old boss saw me. He said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm just, you know, I'm not working because I'm having a baby." And he said, "Well, are you looking for work?" And I said, "Well, I hadn't really thought about it, why?" And he said, "Oh, well, we're going down the tube fast here, and your old area, which was what they called the POD section, pay on delivery, not COD, POD, we're trying to clear all the outstanding debts, and we're looking for someone to do that. Can you come back and work with us?" I said, "Oh, how can I go to the hospital and have my checkups and all that?" "Fine, when you bundy on and when you bundy off, that's fine." And I actually worked there till the 22nd of November, and Michelle was due on the 4th of December, and ultimately was born on the 14th of December. But my husband was away and with the Navy, and he came home on the 22nd of November, and I thought, well, that'll be it. And in that time, I cleared up the POD section and another section as well. So got everything all organised, so he thought it was marvellous.
So you had, how many children?
Three children.
And were you living back up here then?
Oh yes, I had Michelle and Darren. I had Michelle while I was in the flat at Stanmore. 21 months later I had Darren, and by this stage we were in a Navy house in Seven Hills. And when Michelle was 4 and Darren was 2, my husband was transferred to Canberra, where we lived 15 years. And in that time I had another child in Canberra, a boy, another boy, who's now 14. And Troy was born an eczema asthmatic, and couldn't ultimately live in Canberra, and so I persuaded my husband to move back to Sydney, and he said, "Well, I don't care where we live as long as we don't live at Quakers Hill." I said, "Well, if we move back to Sydney, that's the only place I'm going to live." And my dad, I had my own post office in Canberra, and my dad decided that he wanted to cut out his sick leave and ultimately retire. So I took over the post office from him, and he cut out all of his sick leave and leave, and unfortunately suffered a blockage in the artery in his leg, which is a long story, but it relates back to a war injury 46 years before that. And he went in for an arterial bypass. It failed. He developed gangrene and had his leg amputated. So it was rather sad to think that for such a fit, able-bodied man, that he ultimately lost his leg. But the doctors wanted to cut it off 46 years before, and he wouldn't let them. So he had it for 46 years longer than he thought he might have. So
you became full-time postmistress then, did you?
Yes. So, and then when, what happens is when someone retires, I'd been acting in the position for 2 years, but when somebody retires, they must advertise the office, but I got it on my record and my ability. And it helped that I'd been here, but I did get it on my own capability, so.
And
so
when you were doing that sort of thing, your children were growing up, and how did you manage with the housework and the shopping and all that sort of thing?
I'm the sort of person that the more I do, the more I do. A lot of people always say to me, "Why don't you get an ironing lady and everything?" And I say, "Well, I've worked hard for my money. I would like to keep it." And But I'm a person that I still to this day hang out a load of washing before I come to work. I always go home for lunch, and even when I worked in the post office in Canberra, and bring my washing in, and cook tea when I got home from work, and then I'd iron overnight. I'd clean whatever rooms needed cleaning sort of through the week, but one day on the weekend would be devoted to doing the whole lot thoroughly right through, washing floors, vacuuming, and I'll still do the same thing today.
And you're very involved in community activities too, like your mother was, aren't you? Sporting and that sort of thing?
Yes, more. Mum was more into behind the scenes with the schools and things like that. Well, I was involved with my children's primary school in Canberra and also their preschool. And but once we moved back here, I'm not really involved in the schools in that aspect. But the things that I'm involved is netball, soccer, basketball. In summer, I still play netball, and I am the highest badged netball umpire at Blacktown Association. But I'm a B grade player when I'm well. And I coach my younger son's basketball team. They play under 16s and they play Wednesday nights. Through winter, I play netball on a Saturday, night comp in summer is on a Tuesday night. And in winter, we play Saturdays. I work in the post office 5.5 days a week. So I finish work here at 11 on a Saturday. I go home, I get changed, and I go straight to netball. I'm there from basically 20 to 12 through till about 6 o'clock. And I coach teams, I umpire, I play, and I also coach umpires for the association and badge them and things like that. My first love is netball. And interestingly enough, when I was growing up, I was a tennis player, and because my parents were tennis players. But when I left school, I used to represent the school in tennis, and I did quite well. But when I left school, it was too far for me to travel to enter into a competition for my age group. I could have gone into open women's or something, and I lost a little bit of interest, but always played socially. And didn't seem to do much. I think in summer we used to go to Auburn swimming pool. We didn't go to Blacktown because all the yahoos went there. We used to go to Auburn because it was nice and pleasant, I always remember. If we went to the beach, we'd go to Manly because we could catch a train and a ferry and go to Manly Beach. That was easily accessible to us. I learned how to dance. Ballroom dancing at HMAS Narimba. We used to have dancing classes there on a Tuesday night.
Was this after this. You were married, or was this?
No, this when I was up. This is when I was growing up. Teenagers. Just suddenly started thinking about sport back in
those days.
And for the boys to attend dancing classes, and it used to be between 8 and 9:30, and you couldn't just walk on a navy base. You had to get on a bus and be transported around. You weren't allowed to walk around there overnight.
How come there's a navy base here so far away from the sea? It seems strange.
that was built for World War II, and it was Air Force then. But with the RAF being at Richmond, they decided that they would put apprentices in, and Navy apprentices was seen to be the thing, because they had a lot of hangars and things like that, where they've got the big workshops. And of course now we've got all that controversy about them going, and we don't know if it's going to be a cargo airport or a university, or it's just very interesting. I would prefer to see it stay as it is, for sentimentality reasons, of course. Getting back to present day sport.
So first of all, you used to go to the dances there.
Oh yes, we used to go to every Tuesday night. And for the boys to attend, they had to pay 2 shillings. And the girls, it cost nothing, because of course boys need girls to dance with to learn how to dance. And it was really for the apprentices to learn the social graces. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we learn every dance out, and they paid two people that came in from some big ballroom place to teach us. And we started off with basics like slow rhythm and jazz waltz and barn dance and cha-cha, and progressed to samba and la bomba, and we could just do everything, every dance.
Is that where you met your husband?
Yes, I didn't actually meet him at the dance. I was going out with a guy who could dance. My husband's a terrible dancer. And he was a footballer, and I think we were just more good mates than anything, and I used to go to the football with him. And always had my eye on the captain of the football team, who I ultimately married. So once I started going out with my husband, I had to teach him how to dance. And he didn't want to be showing up in front of everybody that he didn't know how to dance, because they thought he could do everything really well. So he never went to the dancing classes for that reason. And he's a reasonable dancer now. But unfortunately, he hears his own beat, which is a lot different to other people's beats. So
dances to the different.
Oh yes, yeah,
drum,
yeah, that's right. But and my sister also married an apprentice from Narimba as well. Mm-hmm. So
in this area, then, was there very much industry or anything like that? So
market gardens,
right.
5-acre farms, chicken farms, and basically back in the days I grew up here, we had a lot of Dutch immigrants came here in the early 1950s, a lot of Dutch immigrants. And we went to school with a lot of Dutch people. But basically we had Maltese, Italians and Greeks.
And how did they affect your life? Did they make a difference at all?
Back in those days, there was no such thing as prejudice. They were people that we'd grown up with, and then still a lot of them are great friends of ours. And but the area today leans more towards, there are still a lot of Maltese in the area, as well as Australians, of course. But interestingly enough, looking back, I think that Australians were in the minority in Quakers Hill way back then.
Really?
Yes. And I feel today we probably are the majority, and with the Maltese still, but we have a huge influx of Filipinos to this area because they have a very big Filipino church here, which is conducted at the community centre on a Sunday. And Filipinos are very religious people, and a lot of their lives centre around the church. So it's like with Cabramatta, that you have the Vietnamese. My sister-in-law lives in Cabramatta, and so I have been through that area, and I could never see that happening here, the same thing as what's happened there, because most of our shops are controlled by Australians in this area. I couldn't see that changing at all, that have been here a long time.
Talking about churches too, I was going to say, did the church play a big role in the community, do you think, in the 50s?
In my life, yes. I grew up going to the Anglican church, little tiny church that it still is today, but we're having a new one built. I also went to the Presbyterian church, which is now called the Uniting Church. Mm-hmm. And the Church of England church was closed the first 12 years of my life. So I went to Sunday school at the Uniting Church, and when the Church of England Church reopened, I went there, and I ultimately became a Sunday school teacher and a GFS leader. And I was a GFS leader until I married and moved away from the area.
What does GFS stand for?
Girls Friendly Society. And then you have the equivalent, which is SEBS, which is Church of England Boys Society. My brothers were in that.
So the church provided social activity
in
the area.
And this is back before the days of television, of course.
Yes.
Not very many people could afford a television. And I had 60 girls in my group between the ages of 7 and 16. And they loved it. And it was rather unfortunate that my girlfriend that took over the group after I left drowned, and it just sort of lost But these days, with the church in the area, we have gone from having Sunday school 3 weekends and then on the 4th weekend a church service. We were always a diocese under, we were also an area under a diocese of Riverston. Ultimately, we then went under the control of the diocese of Doonside. And if we wanted to go to church, we went to Doonside because they would only open our church for one church service once a term, which is 3 times a year. And now we have church service at 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, 2 services at 8:30 and 10 on a Sunday, and we're getting a new church built. We have a marvellous minister that ministers just to Quakers Hill. He's not, doesn't go anywhere else. Churches, right.
And so just to ask you another question about finances, in your household when you were a child or before you were married, in your mother's household, who handled the finances, your mother or your father?
I think they both did together.
Did they sort of jointly?
Ultimately, when my mother didn't need to work but continued to work, my father then controlled the finances. That was after we were growing up, of course. And my mother went all around the world.
Oh, did she?
Yeah. So...
did she travel, what, in the 50s or...?
No. My baby brother was born in 1958, so it wasn't until in the 70s that she really started travelling overseas and loved every minute of it, you know. So she's been... she had been everywhere.
And what about in your household when you were married, the finances there?
I have always controlled them. Mm-hmm. Mainly because Frank was in the Navy and he was always away, so somebody had to do it.
Yeah.
Mainly it was because of necessity, because my husband wasn't home. So when he ultimately got out of the Navy, I handed everything to him and I said, well, you can do it now. And he said, you've done such a good job, you can continue. So I still do it.
Right.
So we do talk about, you know, what we're going to pay and things like that. And he says, oh, whatever you think. So I don't know how he'd ever cope if I wasn't around anyway, so.
And being one of 6 children, I was just wondering, do you know if your mother planned to have 6 children or was that?
Yes.
She did.
My mother always decided she would have 3 girls and 3 boys, boys, which is rather ironical, yes.
She did.
My father came from a family of 5. He was the oldest of 5. Mm-hmm. 3 boys and 2 girls. And he's actually lost his 2 brothers who were both younger than him. He's the oldest and he's still going. And but my mother, being sort of having the 2 brothers and having such a broken home as a young child, always wanted 6. So it's the way it seems to have worked out now is 3 girls, a 6-year break and 3 boys. But my mother lost a little boy when my sister was 3, my baby sister was 3. And
in childbirth?
Yes, she had him when she was not quite 6 months pregnant. And he lived 2 hours and died. But back in those days, they couldn't do anything for... preemie baby, so it was just too early. And the doctor told her she'd never conceive, let alone carry for 9 months, and she carried my 3 brothers. I am the shortest in the family. My brothers are well into their 6'3", 4". And then on my baby brother was born when I was 13, but on my 16th birthday, she lost a girl at the same stage. So it should have been 3 girls. 4 boys and a girl, but it's just not to be. And they say 1 in 4 is a miscarriage, and my mother miscarried her 4th and her 8th. So it's interesting. No.
And so what about yourself? Did you plan to have your children, the 3 children? Or?
I always planned to have 4.
Did you?
So I had 2 children, a girl and a boy, pigeon pair, and I thought I was very clever. Very different from my parents. My father had to wait till he's 4 for his son. And but I never felt there was enough, coming from a big, happy, close family. Mm. And so ultimately, when my husband got out of the Navy, we decided we'd have 2 more. It took me 4 years to fall pregnant. And when that child was born, he was an eczema asthmatic and he never slept through the night till he was 3 years old. So we decided in our wisdom to call it quits. But I would have really liked to have had that one more child, but The specialists gave us 70% or more chance of the next child being the same or worse than Troy. And
right.
We nearly lost him a couple of times, and we just didn't think it was fair for him either.
Mm.
So we stopped with him.
Mm. And then, so looking back and reflecting on the years you lived here, say in the 50s when you were growing up, and what it is today here in Quakers Hill particularly, how do you think it has changed since the population has increased and suburbanisation seems to have moved out further this way?
Right, I always think progress is good for any area, but being a real sentimentalist, it's nice to sort of go back to the days when we didn't just have school sports, we competed on weekends against other schools, and we had such great community togetherness, I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
The things I don't like about progress today is I have been the victim of a few armed robberies in my post office.
Have you?
And out of the people that have, we've had five here, but out of all the people, only one's been Australian, all the rest have been foreign. My last one was a Romanian. And if that's progress, it's something I don't like.
The lack of security.
The lack of security.
About your home, locking up the home and that sort of thing, has that changed?
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story. I have two German Shepherds, and my house is never locked. The front of it is, but the back isn't. Because if somebody wanted to come in my front door, there would be two German Shepherds there to say hi. And I feel safe where I live, even though I'm on a main street, because all the people that live next to me and over the road watch me grow up from a little girl. And we all take care of one another. If there's anyone suspicious or anything, we keep an eye on them. And if my little tiny dogs happen to get out, Auntie Phil rings me up and says, Judith, your little dog's sitting on the front porch. And where could you get that?
Mm.
You know, these days, you just can't get that sort of thing.
No. So you're really on the outskirts of the Blacktown municipality, aren't you? So it's probably not as... That sort of thing hasn't changed as much here, possibly.
Oh, no. Well, Quakers Hill is the third highest break-in area in New South Wales.
Really? Mm. Is it?
Yes. So, as I said, I feel quite happy coming to work, and I feel very happy when I feed my dogs every night because they do a good job.
Yes.
But I think the thing that is most significant to me, having reared two children through their teenage years, is the fact that when I grew up, no one had ever heard of drugs. And I was a real Beatles fan. I went down the airport and touched Paul McCartney's hand, and he went back to England, and the next song they released was Hey Jude. I always felt that was very significant to me. The next one he released was Michelle, and that is my daughter, named after that song.
Really?
Yeah. And back in those days, that was the start of the hippies and the flower children. And my husband actually went to America in 1968 to bring back F-111s for the Australian Air Force, and he was on HMAS Melbourne. And he drove through a suburb called Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco and watched people picking food out of the garbage bins, which was something that Australia at that time had never seen. And he wrote me a letter, which I kept, and telling me all about this site, and I have a photo of, he just couldn't believe it. And the bus driver said, because they all said to him, you just went through a red light, and he said, oh, you don't stop here. And so it was very dangerous to stop in this suburb called Haight-Ashbury.
Goodness.
And years later, when I went to America with my mother for a holiday, I drove through Haight-Ashbury, and I just could not believe it, because Haight-Ashbury had become the world's homosexual town. That's where they all live now.